Yeah, thank the organizers for giving us the opportunity to participate today. I think it's a great meeting. Ida is a fantastic job. And I remember not a long time ago, I committed to a 12-hour plane ride to listen to Michael Caron and others. So driving 10 minutes to a parking lot is much more convenient. All right, so how does it go? Yeah. So I thought I kick off and tell you a little bit about IntelliKind and our focus and effort on this PI3 kinase mTOR pathway. And then I move into one particular program, the mTOR, tell you the story about mTOR, what is TORC1, TORC2, and then we should jump right into INK128, which is the molecule. I share with you how it looks, how it performs, and then hopefully we have some time for discussion. Quick housekeeping, we have 30 minutes. Just me? All right. Probably I exhaust this time. Now, there, in way of introduction, there has been, continues to be, a tremendous interest of the pharmaceutical industry in tracking the PI3 kinase EGTM-TOR pathway, in particular going after cancer. Yet different companies have taken different approaches to it. For example, inhibitors such as rapamycin. I hope you can see the pointer. Yeah? Okay. Rapamycin, or referred to as Rapalox, sort of the ultra-selective inhibitor against this pathway. And then we have inhibitors of a broad-spectrum profile. It started with LY and LY-like compounds and so forth. We recognized when we built our strategy that Rapalox and broad-spectrum inhibitors clearly have helped validating this pathway, in particular from a pharmacological point of view. But we also recognized early on that mTOR is a key component of this pathway, and it's very often the driving force of at least broad-spectrum inhibitors. We know by then that selective inhibitors can be made, and I think we will get by Langdon Miller from Calistoga Gilead a fantastic example about the potential and power of isoform selective inhibitor against the pathway. We also made very early on part of our thinking that this pathway and others will require combination therapies. And the more potent and selective your inhibitor is, the better you can plan and use it. So way in 2007, when we started IntelliKind, sort of in a walking distance from here, our strategy was to discover and develop isoform selective inhibitors against the critical node against this pathway. And today I enjoy the opportunity to introduce you to INK128, which is a small molecule kinase inhibitor against mTOR, which we advanced in clinical development by the end of 2009. Yet my talk will primarily focus on the preclinical research characterization of this molecule. Now, how are we doing things at IntelliKind that I would now proudly and confidently say we do extremely well? It started all off with the pioneering work of Kevan Shawkat, who recognized that there is not only a biological relation and interdependence of PI3 kinase isoforms there and mTOR, there was also a structural relation, and that hence a chemical interaction. So we embarked on that. I think we have sort of industrialized this approach as much and as much as we can and should do as a small venture-backed company. We're exploring SAR-based design. We have a very experienced team in kinase drug discovery, and we established a very productive collaboration with the academic leader in the field. He had privileged access to all crystal structures against all PI3 kinase isoforms. And if you put this together, a sort of smart hard work, and you have access to structure information, focused SAR, it has been very productive for us. In less than 3 years, we discovered three molecules, INK128, that we will discuss today with you. INK1117 is a PI3 kinase alpha selective inhibitor that we are preparing now to put in the clinic in the next few months. And then we have a partnership collaboration on inhibitors against PI3 kinase delta and gamma. And I think the next speaker will help us to understand the importance of those isoforms. So this is a good meeting to be for us. Many of this science will be covered, and I'll focus again on mTOR. So mTOR, you know, what is it? How does it work, and why is it actually so important? And life has been fairly simple for most part. In signaling, there was sort of an IGF receptor, IRS1, PI3 kinase, EGT, mTOR. It was a linear pathway. There was rapamycin around to block it and so forth. But about 3 years ago, a fundamentally fascinating and important discovery was made primarily by David Sabatini's lab that now shed much more light on the complexity, and a basic discovery have now provided sort of guidance to how we should track this pathway, perhaps differently and better by next generation mTOR inhibitors. So I walk you through this, I keep it light, I love that slide and could lose a lot of time here, but keep it simple. It's mTOR, it's a serine 3 inputting kinase, and we know now that mTOR operates in two signaling complexes. One is called complex 1, which is defined by an adapter protein, RAPTOR. And there's another complex where mTOR participates, complex 2, which is defined by RICTOR. And this indeed is a biochemical molecular detail, but please pay attention that it's going to be very important for our story. So there's complex 1 and complex 2 inside cells where mTOR signals, and these two complexes are, you know, mutually exclusively formed. mTOR 1 is important because it couples the abundance of energy, glucose, nutrients to inside cells and regulates important biological processes, ribosome biogenesis, protein translation, housekeeping functions, and eventually cancer cell metabolism. Complex 2, on the other hand, is more engaged in growth factor hormonal signaling and is very much under the influence of two important signaling systems, PI3 kinase and oncogenes derived of, and then P10, a tumor suppressor, which is sort of the negative regulator of PI3 kinase, and I'll make a great deal out of this soon. So you have two complexes, they are working together, there are some crosstalks, but this complex is upstream of other signaling systems. And this hopefully makes a point to you that these functions here, these activities control hallmarks of tumor cell biology. But that's not only enough. I think a good source for us to understand targets in cancer genetics and you know, identify and prioritize targets comes from cancer genetics. And nature has taken its course here. It's, for me, sort of puts a sign up and says, please inhibit here. I cannot think currently about another target system that is so much physically embedded in tumor suppressor and oncogene signaling. As you can see, some of the most important oncogenes or tumor suppressors are regulating indirectly or directly mTORC1 and mTORC2. So the opportunity for us slash challenge is to identify tumor types on the basis of our understanding of cancer genetics where these inhibitors hopefully provide higher sensitivity to tumor types. There's a lot for also to gain in terms of pharmacodynamic, and we will see a number of data in a moment about this. The other challenge we have, I think, is to identify certain tumor types that really by cancer genetics speak to both TORC1 and TORC2. And we'll zoom in on some oncogenes and tumor suppressors here in a moment. Now, I anticipate that some of you now start thinking, well, there are already mTOR inhibitors in form of rapamycin or rapalox. What is it that they're really trying to do better and different? And I'll explain this with this cartoon. We know now that mTOR has two complexes, and this discovery has allowed us to understand how rapamycin mTOR inhibitors really work. These are allosteric inhibitors of mTOR, but only of complex 1. Once again, rapamycin only interacts with mTOR as part of complex 1. Here, it is a very potent inhibitor of S6 kinase and S6, really homeopathically potent on this part. However, it only at best partially modulates the activity of other important downstream markers of complex 1, such as 4-ABP and others. As a result of a partial inhibition of complex 1 by rapamycin, it interacts and engages with the feedback mechanism, which surprisingly leads to an upregulation activity of AKT, which is sort of an oncogenic pathway and may limit the activity of rapamycin. It does a very good job here. However, it doesn't affect complex 2, and if anything, activates that. So I think we have a very simple hypothesis here, and sort of telling an old dog a new trick. We go after the ADP binding pocket of mTOR. We block the enzymatic activity. It doesn't depend on protein-protein interaction. And our hypothesis is by doing so, we will block mTOR kinase in these both complexes. Hence, we will block, hopefully, and you will see some data, the evidence now, a number of downstream substrates of TORC2. We will overcome feedback mechanism mediated by rapamycin, and we also have an effect on complex 2. So that's the hypothesis, and we're very excited about it because I think it all holds together and it's going to work. Now, here's INK128, the molecule, which is now sort of becoming the center of the presentation. We recently had a first disclosure presentation at AACR. So here's the molecule that has been, for, as you can imagine, for 3 years, a really well-guarded secret. Here's the baby. It's a very, very small molecular kinase inhibitor. By molecular weight, for some of the experts in the room, it's astonishing. By the molecular weight, by the physical chemical properties associated with a very small molecular weight and its high potency, basically the molecule is soluble in water. And these properties really have helped us to rapidly advance this molecule from discovery to phase one evaluation in less than 2 years. I mentioned to you that we have experts in the lab that design these molecules in terms of selectivity pocket, potency pocket, and so forth. Here's an homology model. And if anyone is interested, please be our guest and talk to the leading scientist who I still fascinated how they actually get to these molecules and so forth. Now there's more to share with you on INK128. Here is this table that, for those of you in the industry, know that extends to at least 100 line items. I give you a little bit more flavor on INK128. But up front, it has met or if not exceeded all our predefined development criteria. INK128, it's a very potent molecule, as mentioned. I'm struggling still with this. Okay, here we go. It has a sizable yet limited window to PI3 kinase isoforms, but in terms of the kinome, it's remarkably selective. We have no concerns identified today of any off-target activity. This is, again, for a very small molecular weight, ATP-competitive kinase inhibitor, astonishing. And now let's pay attention to something that is of importance. It is very potent on the enzyme level, but the potency, it maintains its integrity. It extends to cells, to human whole blood, to in vivo system. It's a highly potent molecule. We have identified now, defined the ED50 in xenograft mouse tumor models around 0.3 milligram per kilogram oral daily dosing. And as said, by the best of our knowledge, we have not identified any liabilities of this molecule. So, going back to cancer biology and cancer genetics, we had one slide that almost qualitatively showed you a number of oncogenes and tumor suppressors that are associated with mTOR signaling. And here's another way of showing this to you by sort of a quantification in numbers. We are a very small company. We have to be mindful of our resources, and maybe other companies should be doing this as well, because we can't sort of take it in a broad development program. So we're trying to prioritize our clinical strategy by, what does cancer genetic tells us? What are other pathway inhibitors tell us? For instance, rapamycin works or should have worked and so forth. And this is just a little bit information. We think breast cancer is an important place for the development of TORC1, TORC2 inhibitors. And if you just look at this, PI3 kinase alpha oncogenic mutation, P10 and AKT, these are really strong drivers of mTOR signaling. There's a high incidence of these mutations. Yeah, the number is actually really impressive. We speak about 30 to 50% of tumor types have mutations on this pathway. And it also tells us that, this is really, really an important pathway, I think. Then interestingly, in endometrial cancer, you have mutations in PI3 kinase alpha oncogene as well as P10. And it's the only tumor type described so far where you have coexisting mutations. Normally, it's mutually exclusive. You hit the pathway by the oncogene or you hit the pathway by the tumor suppressor. Nature has here decided a tumor type which gets a double hit. And that leads me already to the introduction of P10, because we think P10 tumor suppressor, the negative regulator of this pathway, is not only from a cancer genetic point of view very important, there are also diseases where there's a high unmet medical need. And I will focus now and show you some data in vivo evaluation of INK128 and the mechanism behind in tumor types that are dominated by P10 mutations. And one of these would be renal cell carcinoma. And it's a meaningful place to consider next generation mTOR inhibitors to put to the test, because the pathway is engaged. P10, again, is frequently found to be mutated, and rapamycin-based mTOR inhibitors have shown some success in this, and we still think we can do, and we need to do, different and better there. And then while we explored our molecules, the Intellikine team and collaborators made some discoveries that I'll share with you now. So I start here and characterize the performance of the molecule. It's fairly simple, actually. We have INK128. We have rapamycin as another way of modulating this pathway. You are now very familiar with that. And then the sorafenib, which is an approved drug in renal cell carcinoma. And we look at two cell lines from renal cell carcinoma. They have in common mutations in VHLL, that is a very important, again, tumor suppressor driving neoangiogenesis, tumor-derived. And then you have PTEN wild type and PTEN mutant. And rather than giving you all the detailed data, the results is that INK128, it performs consistent across this genetic background, and it leads to a full dose response. Rapamycin is a partial inhibitor of tumor cell growth. And sorafenib, as one can expect, has little to no effect on tumor cells. This extends to a larger panel of renal cell carcinoma and various genetic background. Now, can we explain the difference between rapamycin, for instance, INK128, and I introduced to you how the signaling works, and here actually really the experimental proof of that is that INK128 in a dose response blocks TOC2 signaling at the level of AKT, its substrate PRAS40, another important substrate of TOC2, AKT signaling, NRDG1, implicated in renal cell carcinoma. So please see how potently it prevents TOC2 signaling. It does the same like rapamycin. It blocks S6 signaling in TOC1. And a differentiator is, as I introduced to you, INK128, a TOC1, TOC2 inhibitor, blocks 4-ABP signaling downstream of TOC1, and rapamycin fails to do so. Once again, there was only a cartoon at the beginning here, it's now really evidence. It's a strong inhibitor of S6 rapamycin, but doesn't affect TOC2 and only partially TOC1. And this has been now managed by active site inhibitors. And there are different means of monitoring this. The more signal you get here, for instance, in this assay, the less CAP-dependent translation you have in tumor cells. And I think other people will potentially speak to this today as well. CAP-dependent translation is very important for tumor cells. Now, moving forward to in vivo, from cells to in vivo, the same experimental design. Now we look in xenograft tumor models. And again, I give you the takeaways. You see the without treatment and then treatment with INK128. It's a low dose, daily oral dosing. INK128, again, performs in terms of anti-tumor growth activity and tumor stasis in both models. Interestingly enough, rapamycin does work better in P10 negative background, and this we anticipated. And sorafenib actually works better in a P10 wild type. And I think it does start telling us something that we potentially want to take advantage of. Of when we go forward in building our clinical strategy. Now, not in tumor cells, this is now the pathway analysis in tumor tissues. INK128 in tumor tissues blocks TOC2 signaling. Here in this case is more potent in TOC1. Again, rapamycin, we can only detect effects on S6 kinase. And pay attention now, sorafenib doesn't at all block this important pathway in tumor cells. And if anything, I'm going to show you it activates actually an important tumor pathway. Prior to go there is, you know, one of the important contribution preclinical scientists can do is to establish a dose exposure activity correlation in tumor mouse models. Can we really show, you know, how much drug is on board? Do we hit the pathway at the right place in time and for how critical period of time? And then can we implement the similar assays when we test our drugs in patients? And this is what we've been doing at Intellikine, and we're actually making tremendous progress looking at similar results from a clinical perspective. Yet, what are we looking at here preclinically? We treat the mice and we look at three sources of material. One is peripheral blood, and here you see by a maximum efficacious dose, a 50% inhibition of signal of TORC1 signaling, in this case subtypes of B cells. You can also do this with monocytes or granulocytes. Now we take skin tissue, and as you can appreciate, there's a strong reduction of signal on 4-ABP by phosphoantibody-mediated immunohistochemistry, S6 and TOC2, and remarkably and most important is we really hit this pathway in tumor tissue. And before, you know, going away from the slide, we should remind ourselves that this is what we see in pathological diagnosis. This is what patients... Often being told that the molecular markers of the disease are highly upregulated. And if you have this side of staining and signal, it's not good news. Very often the tumor is very aggressive, is resistant to standard of cares. And I guess the whole goal is, and there wouldn't be another purpose of this presentation, then the whole goal is to get this downregulation of this pathway in tumor patients. If we see this, I think we have a great chance to impact. Now, back to renal cell carcinoma. The scientists in Telekine wanted to learn more about. One is, you know, how does the drug work? How does it compare to rapamycin? And there is a lot of information in literature that mTOR and rapamycin, for instance, is very important for regulation angiogenesis. And I give you already the upfront takeaway that we would actually challenge this. We do not see strong activity of rapamycin in this model on angiogenesis, neither with INK128. And here are the data. We compare INK128 and sorafenib, and we measure first the production of VEGF that you can detect, and that's here, sorry, in the plasma that is derived from renal cell primary tumors. You see sorafenib is activating VEGF production, INK128 blocks it. We also block tumor cell growth in vivo, and sorafenib does have very little effect on it. However, sorafenib is a very potent and effective inhibitor of angiogenesis, and I'm recognizing I'm also the Hall of Fame of angiogenesis, and David, don't jump on me that this is not good enough, but... So we block with sorafenib as expected. That's not a great deal, neoangiogenesis. What I think is interesting, and the scientists believe it's interesting, that an important mediator here, HIF-2, is actually not inhibited. It's upregulated as a compensatory mechanism. Phospho-AKT, as a measure of AKT activity in TOC2 signaling and TOC1, please look at this. Upon treatment of sorafenib, you activate this pathway, which is implicated in the tumor genesis of the primary tumor. INK128, a little bit against the dogma, doesn't really affect neoangiogenesis and doesn't affect the regulation of markers. However, it's very effective on AKT and TOC1 signaling, as you could predict, and it has an effect on HIF-2 a little bit on cancer cell metabolism. So I guess I'm preparing a very logical next step experiment here. And that is, you know, how about combining these two drugs? You have one drug that acts on the tumor cells intrinsically. It acts on tumor cell capacity of translation, cell growth, metabolism. And maybe you combine it with a drug that acts from the other angle in tumor angiogenesis. It's similar to Dennis' introduction. It's complex. We have to think a little bit more in the complexities, and we have to apply cocktails of drugs to stabilize the disease. So preclinical, that's been done. I obviously have to get myself on this point. Oh, maybe. You'll see that with the INK128 at a suboptimal dose now, we have stasis, so sorafenib in combination of these two drugs are very effective. What we find astonishing is that in tumor tissue, sorafenib activates it but blocks angiogenesis. INK128 has sort of a complementary mechanism of action, and the combination might be meaningful. By no means, I think we plan and propose that take sorafenib and INK128 forward together, because sorafenib, you know, has a very limited tolerability. But there are other angiogenesis inhibitors in preparation. Some of them, David Cherish is working on with Merck Serono, and others to come. So the concept there is there to combine anti-angiogenic agents, tyrosine kinase inhibitors, with INK128. Allow me to leave renal cell carcinoma behind as an important indication. We go to models of prostate cancer. Why prostate cancer? Again, it's a tumor type that has a high incidence of mutations along the axis of PSP kinase mTOR signaling, in particular P10. And there's another important gene is MYC. And you really can put INK128 or TOC1, TOC2 inhibitor between P10 and MYC. And these P10 and MYC sort of, you know, very sought after targets for cancer cell biology. mTOR signaling, TOC1, TOC2, Raptor, Richter, you name it, has been very elegantly validated in mouse models of prostate cancer. And the third point, I will actually add some meat on the bone by some data. So here is an introduction to the experimental design and project, but also perhaps the most important data. We are using here a P10 transgenic prostate cancer model. It's not an xenograft nude mouse immunocompromised model. So it models the disease more faithfully and has an intact immune system. And as you can see, when P10 is deleted over the course of 6 to 8 months, you get really the formation of the prostate intraepithelial neoplasia. The tumor is formed in P10 background. Now, if we treat with vehicle, we take again as a comparison RAD001, that is a clinical approved Rapalog, and INK128. And as you can see, some activity, but much enhanced activity, INK128. And we explain this by the potency and by a more comprehensive inhibition of TOC1, TOC2. We would also hope that a difference of 20 or 30 or 40% of efficacy might be very meaningful in translating more success of these inhibitors clinically. And we have a very similar pharmacodynamic pattern analysis, again on TORC1, TORC2, but we have proven this already with previous slides, so I'll move on. Then we look in histopathology again. What's the phenotype? Is it something relevant? Can this translate to the human disease? Here we have, again, treated vehicle-controlled with Rapalogs. You see a very moderate effect on the neoplasia here in INK-128. And I hope you agree, it's almost normalizing the prostate epithelium. We again see activity primarily on control of tumor cell proliferation in vivo. However, with some of convenient surprise in this model, with P10 prostate cancer, in a transgenic mouse model, we actually see induction of apoptosis at the right place in time. This is rather the exception than the rule for mTOR inhibitors. They are more tumor stasis. But this might be relevant and hopefully something that guides us again going forward from a clinical design. We continue to monitor pharmacodynamic effects in tumor tissue, and I really want to make this point so hard because I think it's so important. You see, when you delete P10, a massive upregulation of TORC1 and TORC2 signaling. In this case, we monitor it with AKT. The inhibition of mTOR by Rapalogs has very moderate to no effect. In some cases, we actually see activation of the AKT pathway. And INK-128 has really a differentiated mechanism of action from Rapalogs, and it's much more potent, and so forth. And the inhibition of AKT actually may explain why we get some induction of apoptosis. Now, not enough. Again, we clearly plan, and I'll make a greater point of it in a moment, we clearly plan on combination therapies. This is the pathway that is either active at the primary place or it's active upon treatment with other drugs. And this is an interesting project and study here with our friends from Aragon. So there are two drugs, novel, INK-128, and the molecule that is being in development at Aragon. And they're novel by two companies that sort of share the same parking lot. And we like that. This project got done, I think, at the same time frame. And I'm aware of MIA insults, one or the other one of you know, but this project got done at the same time frame that Pfizer responds to an MTA on doing this collaboration. So that is exciting that small companies can move quickly, they are focused, and get this done. So we have combined INK-128 here with Aragon TRUC, and as you can see, we get a more profound anti-tumor activity. It's stabilized as well, and both drugs are used actually at suboptimal doses. So that's encouraging, and I appreciate again the support and collaboration with Aragon. I touched on it, combination therapies. I think that's our vision. We truly believe with, you know, sort of super Rapalogs, INK-128, which is differentiated from established mTOR inhibitors, there is a hope and chance for single agent activity, but one has to be very intelligent here, one has to focus on the right tumor type and so forth. But on the longer term, every one of these drugs will and have to be used in combination. And actually, we think they should be used in combination much earlier. It's a fundamentally important pathway. I described to you that it blocks tumor intrinsic hallmarks and so forth, so it's broadly applicable. And a number of drugs that act on tumor cells actually activate this pathway. So there is a very strong rationale for combination. Now, there's also a need for combination, but when you block these pathways, you will get, you know, compensatory adaptation, homeostatic adaptation of tumor cells. The tumor cell will try to outsmart the pharmacological insult. So you get feedback mechanisms. So we have to learn from feedback mechanism, have a second or third hit on these feedback mechanisms, combine it, and really now it's us to outsmart the tumor. And this is, I think, going to work. It will take much more time and resources. And we list here a number of approaches that we think are very suitable for combination therapies with TORC1, TORC2 inhibitors, other signaling systems, which makes a lot of sense. We mentioned already tyrosine kinase inhibitors. These two make sense from feedback and parallel pathways, and then standard of care, of course. And then we have an arsenal of weapons against the PI3 kinase mTOR pathway. We have our own PI3 kinase alpha selective inhibitor, which we think is actually very clever to be combined, and because, you know, we have data, that's why I'm thinking like this, and I'll show you in a moment. And we also think in hematologic malignancies, the combination of mTOR inhibitors with drugs such as CAL-101 and others is potentially very, very exciting. Now, I'm finishing up the presentation of some data. I give you two examples on powerful combination. I start off at endometrial cancer. Again, pay attention to you have mutations on PI3 kinase alpha and KRAS. This is probably as bad as it gets. You know, you hit the two most important pathways in tumor cells, and these are very strong drivers. And now we compare INK128 together with paclitaxel, and as you see, both drugs have some activity as single agent, and the combination here, and you stop treating, you keep the tumor down. That's interesting. That's a relevant phenotype. Now, the point I want to make in addition is upon treatment with paclitaxel, you get... So I get two signals now, too. You throw your BlackBerry on me? So it's we've seen this all over, again and again and again. So with paclitaxel, you actually activate the TORC1 and TORC2 pathway. And that maybe limits the primary activity of these agents on the tumor cells. And I think it's our responsibility is to go after that and combine it. And here what you see. The activation of this pathway upon paclitaxel treatment is inhibited. It doesn't block, if anything, enhance molecular mechanism of apoptosis. And maybe it explains a remarkable phenotype. One more example on this is, again, something we are very excited because now we start combining INK128 with Intellikines, PI3 kinase alpha, selective inhibitors. And more exciting is that's what we should do clinically. We focus on tumor types with the right genetic background. We don't do these non-randomized, you know, dilutive trials. And this is something we really contemplate going forward. And what is so exciting is when you block TORC1, TORC2, in addition you block PI3 kinase alpha oncogenic signaling, you treat, you take off the treatment, the tumor is not coming back. And we think xenografts I don't like so much, but when you see strong phenotypes and remarkable phenotypes, hopefully this is something that will translate. I spare you of the pharmacodynamic analysis to the right, just be ensured that this holds all well together. Now, it's clear now, and it's unfortunately even, you know, more complex than ever proposed by Doug Hanahan and Bob Weinberg a decade ago, that tumor cell biology, cancer, is extremely complex. It's much more complex than everyone contemplated prior. There's a lot of tumor intrinsic mechanism, there's cancer inflammation, there's angiogenesis, there's stem cells. It's a long list of what's going on. So not only are combination therapies acquired in our mind, and it's shared by many others, I also want to highlight to you with mTOR as a target that acts in two complexes, TORC1 and TORC2, and has such a fundamentally important role to tumor cell biology by affecting these hallmarks. It's an exciting mechanism to take into the complexity of tumor cell biology. And with a combination of one or two more drugs, I think this may actually really work. In summary, I hope you got a flavor of our excitement and commitment to this pathway, the progress Intellikine has made. mTOR is an important system, particularly with this twist of TORC1, TORC2. And if you have an important target and an outstanding molecule and you have the resources, support, and smart development, then we feel very encouraged that hopefully we can impact on cancer patients by novel medicine. There's a lot of people I should thank. The last 3-4 years have been very intense and productive, yet I focused the presentation of preclinical research, so I want to highlight to you the people that supported us here. First of all and foremost, Yi Leo, Ping Daren, and Michael Martin and their teams at Intellikine. These three guys sort of make the magic happen. And then we have, of course, Kevan Schorgard as a strong supporter of Intellikine. I showed you data from David Ruggiero and others, and I mentioned the enjoyable collaboration with Aragon. There are many more people to list, from investors to management to investigators and others, but I focus on what has helped us for this presentation. Thanks very much.